I would think, Doug, that the Cardinal isn't that slippery, and surely if you bring the throttle all the way to idle as you're following this glide path, you'll slow down. But if anybody knows Cardinals, it's you, not me. So what I want to know is, you really can't slow down and go down, or you just shouldn't?
A difficult question. And as in so many answers, it depends, okay? It depends on what kind of a descent you need. And the important thing for me is being below flap speed of 130 and below gear speed of 125. And I personally, in my Cardinal, look for 120 for the gear. It's not that you're going to damage the gear, but you can damage the gear doors, okay? The same thing, you can damage the flaps if you deploy them above 130. Yes, it will slow down. It's not slippery like a Mooney. And if it's as paint-free as mine, as Tom has mentioned, yeah, it's a little draggy. But there are still, I have found it on more than one occasion where I get a little behind the airplane, that it gets difficult to get slowed below those specific 130 and 125 speeds, especially when you're descending trying to capture a glide path.
So in your approach, you're going to descend even steeper. This is already a 3.5-degree glide path. You're going to do it even more aggressively. You say 10 degrees down. That'll do it. But that's pretty steep. You're going to be looking at that attitude indicator and seeing a lot of ground. Is there a practical limit for pitch attitudes in IMC?
Good question. In this situation, I'm comfortable with it. Okay. Bottom line for me is that I want to be able to intercept that glide path from below. I want to be able to get down to the altitude where I can level off and slow up enough to do it the way I know it. I know the numbers for my Cardinal. I know they work, so I don't have to chase anything. Okay. I'm a little freaked that I'm pulling power all the way to idle and pushing it over, because there is an issue with thinking about engine cooling and shock cooling. I'm not thrilled to do it. To be very honest, the smartest thing is to, hey, unable, I'm in no rush, I got plenty of gas, if I could be around.
I mean, you have that option, right? Mm-hmm. You can choose number five and you can go miss here, but the difference, it seems like, is that you are really familiar with this plane. That's why you reject the go down and slow down option, because maybe it's possible. You know it's difficult, and it's why you're willing to maybe take this more aggressive approach.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
Just all familiarity with the airplane.
But amongst other things, okay, I do practice emergency descents. My greatest fear in flying is an engine fire. And what's the maneuver with an engine fire for an emergency descent to get on the ground as quickly as you can? This is hardly an emergency descent. When I do an emergency descent, I'm pitched down much more than 10 degrees, and I'm typically in about a 50-degree bank in a forward slip. So this is straight ahead. Is, to me, it's... yeah, it's challenging. You need to know what you're doing. Don't make this up on the spot. But if you know the numbers, it will work.
Now, Tom, you probably have less Cardinal experience than Doug. I don't know if you have.
Pretty much everybody has less Cardinal time than Doug. <That's>...
So, yeah, I have no idea how much Cardinal time you have, but I figured that was a safe bet. But you're going to go for it here. You're going to just start following the glide path, slowing down as you do.
Yeah, and it just seems like we only have to lose 10 knots, right? We're 140, we need 130 for the flaps, and then 5 more knots for the gear. It just seems like by pretty aggressively pulling the throttle back that you ought to be able to get 10 knots out of this thing to be able to get flaps in while you're in the descent. What I don't like about two is that basically you're talking, it becomes essentially a dive and drive kind of thing, and it would be easy in the distraction to miss the 3,000-foot one and continue below that. And, you know, and then you're struggling to get back on the glide slope and all that sort of thing. So I really like the idea of capturing the glide path and following that down. And it just seems like with a Cardinal, we'll be using prop control and other things and a slip and IMC. I don't know, that might be a little creepy. I'm not sure I would do that, but that's another tool you've got available to help bleed off some speed. And get again just 10 knots, and then you got flaps down, and then it seems like you could bleed the speed off.
So you'd go prop forward to help.
If I needed to, yeah.
And this is all happening. You know, we're a few miles from the final approach fix. You're probably getting switched over to Santa Monica Tower here.
Right.
It's a busy time. How do you prioritize between dealing with ATC and getting this plane? You know, because you're hand flying here. This autopilot doesn't have any pitch control.
Right. Well, aviate, navigate, communicate, right? So I'm going to fly the airplane. I'm going to get the speed under control. And I'm going to call the tower, you know, kind of when I get everything else under control. The other thing I've got in the back of my mind is, you know, the citation's coming in behind me. And so you think, oh, my gosh, this jet's following me. Well, yeah, but it's only a 3,500-foot runway. So guess what? He's slowing down, too, because he's got to get way down to, like, his slowest possible speed to be able to even get into a 3,500-foot runway. So he's not screaming in behind you at a super high speed. So that's just another point to keep in mind, I guess.
True.
I'd agree with Doug. I don't necessarily think that you need to go all the way to 3,000. I think the key is getting the power off and getting an aggressive descent so that you can get below the glide slope. The last thing you want to be doing is roaring up on the final approach fix, still struggling to catch the glide slope. That's the recipe for a missed approach. So getting down, and as soon as you start getting some drag, it's going to slow down pretty quickly, you know, and then you can configure. You may even, it's 3,500 or somewhere, you might be able to come back in with the power and track the glide slope again, but you got to get below it. That's the key. But let's talk about speed control on this approach. And I think Tom hit it, is the citation may even be slower than the Cardinal can go on approach speed, right? Because you can do 140, probably even 150 in a descent, and the citation's slowing. So I've never been a fan of that reduce to approach speed or keep your speed up or anything like that without specifying a number. And that's the key. The key is the communication. If the controller says keep your speed up, well, what do you want me to do? I can do, you know, in the Cardinal, you've got probably, what, a 75-knot speed range? You could fly 75 knots or you could fly 150, okay? You know, what do you want me to do? Tell me what you want me to do, or I'll tell you what I can do. I can fly 140 knots to dart, then I'm going to slow to 90. And now the controller knows. And then you know how to space your traffic behind it. So specific numbers rather than this keep your speed up kind of stuff, because you could wind up running over the guy in front of you now, you know, which might be a, you know, another citation. So that's my take on it.
Doug. But is it not true that the keep your speed up only counts to the final fix, from the final fix?
No, it actually is approach clearance. Approach clearance cancels.
When you issue an approach clearance, that cancels any prior speed restriction, but then you issue a new speed restriction
with the approach clearance. Okay.
And that's good to the final approach fix.
Right. But
so they can't assign a specific speed inside the final approach fix, but it routinely happens where ATC will tell you inside the final approach fix either give you indications your minimum spaced on traffic ahead. Oh, okay, I need to pull my speed back. Or they can tell you, pull right back to your final. Or they might say, keep your speed up as much as you can. There's nothing that says they can't assign sort of a general sense of what they want you to do without specifically giving a number. So they can't give a number inside the final approach fix that you have to do.
Right. But you, and with the approach clearance, you would have to restate the speed.
Every approach clearance I give.
Right.
But if you were to give a clearance saying, your best forward speed, it's only to the final fix, is that not? Or is it best forward speed all the way to DA?
What's best forward speed? That's the thing, is it's a vague number. Right. What does it mean? You know, if it was VFR, would you fly 150 knots to a 1 mile final and then pop everything and, you know?
No.
Well,
IFR, I have gotten similar clearance. You know, I need your best forward speed.
And that's
all they say.
Right. To me, that's a bad technique.
Agreed.
Yeah, well, but it's not uncommon,
it's
right?
It's not uncommon.
The way I've always kind of taken it is when you know they can't assign a speed inside the final approach fix, it's like, hey, I can't tell you what to do here, but wink, wink, it would be nice if you would go fast.
Exactly.
And that's why you come back with, I can do this to this point. What do you need?
Right. But I think it's useful information. We're talking about how to keep the controllers happy here. It's good to know that an approach clearance cancels a speed restriction unless it's restated, and that B, it ends at the final approach fix.
The hard speed assignment that you can be held to account for ends at the final approach fix. So if I'm going to assign a speed to somebody to the final approach fix, usually it's a negotiation. If I've got somebody in a Cardinal that's landing and I've got a jet behind them, I'm going to ask specifically, what kind of speed are you going to do for sure? And when they say, well, I can do 120 to the final approach fix, I'll say, Roger, maintain 120 knots to the final approach fix. Mm-hmm. And now that's a control instruction, and they're expected to comply with it. Whereas inside the marker, now it's a different conversation of, hey, please go fast. And yeah. There's a jet behind you. Yeah. So do the best you can.
Try to make the first turn off, you know, that kind of stuff.
Any of that. Minimum time on the runway.
Yeah. And it's your job as a pilot to say unable or to say, but I can do this.
Well, I mean, if you're told best forward speed, I don't think you would say, I'm unable best forward speed. You just say, well, the best I can do is this number, or this is what I'm going to do for you.
Right. I could give you 100 and unable the first turn off or something like that.
Sure.
But then the controller knows and you can plan. And that's the whole key to this, is knowing what the airplane can do. And then you go back to the airplane that's behind them and you know how much distance you've got, you know the closure rate, and you assign a speed to the trailing aircraft and you maintain separation that way.
Sure. Mark, you're bailing out.
I'm bailing out. First of all, on what we've just been talking about, I'm in the definite camp that best forward speed is passing the ball to me to let them know what I can give them. And I'm in the, I can give you, you know, X to dart, and then I got to slow down to Y. I'm in that group to begin with. In terms of my decision to bail out, the more I listen to Doug give his reasons, the more I realize my answer is absolutely correct, because our pilot is not Doug. Our pilot is a relatively low-time pilot, plenty of time, I think, in the Cardinal, but in terms of his instrument experience, very limited. I know what Arizona's like. Colorado's very much the same. He's already made decisions that has led to this predicament. I don't think it's going to get any better. Becoming unstabilized at this point is a big deal. The first thought I thought was, I can probably do this too, and this is really doable. I mean, I don't have a lot of Cardinal time, but I have some, and it's definitely doable. And despite the FAA's now thing about the continuous final descent approach, there is a place for dive and drive, but I don't think it's here for this pilot with a 400-foot ceiling.
It's a great point about the pilot's lack of actual experience and busy airspace experience, because the thing that's hard here is not flying an approach fast, it's slowing down, right? It's the reconfiguring and retrimming as you slow down while hand flying. Does it make any difference to you if you had a great autopilot in this plane? So the hand flying is kind of taken care of for you and you just have to monitor the slowing down?
I don't think so. Not with the level of experience that we're talking about in here. I think that the autopilot, then you're abdicating your PIC responsibility to an autopilot. And, because you're letting the autopilot do something that you can't do yourself. And I think that's a mistake.
Catherine, you're going to follow this glide path, slow down as you go down, same as Tom.
Absolutely. Let me say something about the notion of a stabilized approach. And even the FAA guidance, to me, is kind of weird. The stabilized approach, they say, is one in which the pilot establishes and maintains a constant angle path toward a predetermined point, and they talk about maintaining a constant final descent speed. But, you know, if I go over the runway and spin down toward it, that actually satisfies that definition of of stabilized approach, right? So the thing is, it's one of those things in life where it's hard to define, but you know it when you see it. And, you know, to me, it involves an element of there's no question that this approach is going to end at a point before the runway where the airplane is on altitude and on speed. And if you want to fly into bigger airports, you need to get used to the idea of flying what actually my friend Rick Durden calls a collected approach. He prefers that instead of the term stabilized, because stabilized is caught up with this notion of constant airspeed. And if you're going to fly into airports like this, you really need to get used to the idea that you can stay on a glide path or a constant angle approach to a runway and actually reduce your speed along the way. I don't think it's that hard.
Kevin.
I think that my choice of diving down to 3,000 feet aggressively is going to result in a stabilized approach. And the reason I say that is by pushing the nose over and aggressively getting down to 3,000, now you've got a couple of miles of a level segment. And that couple of miles of level segment where I can get my speed and configuration nailed as I'm approaching the glide path, to me, that makes it a whole lot easier to manage flying down the glide path in a stable way because I had that level segment.
It gives you what you wanted in the first place from the VNAV that wasn't set up quite right to achieve it, right?
Exactly.
Doug.
A couple of things I will say just specifically to the Cardinal. The Cardinal does have a wonderful speed brake, and it's called the nose gear door. But you have to be below 125 to get that speed brake out. It's very difficult to get down to 125 without getting antenna flaps, even with the power off. And especially if you're trying to track a glide path or even from above getting down to that glide path. It's not a slippery airplane, but by the same token, it's not my super cruiser. And I just know the difficulties of this. And as Kevin just said, I want to be stabilized no later than the final fix. And I don't worry about speed once I'm at the final fix. I'm trying to help the controller out, trying to help the Citation out. To be very honest, if I was the pilot in the scenario, as Mark has said, the smartest thing, say, unable, box me around. I'm in no rush. And that way you can do it. The big point I'd like to think of my response is the fact that the pilot made a mistake in his descent planning to begin with. And had he done it properly, this would be a non-event.
Mark.
To Catherine's point about, you know, if you're going to fly into busy airports, you got to be used to this. And the point is training. To be used to it. We all teach these configuration charts with approach level, and I actually have two approach level speeds on my charts in faster airplanes. One of them I simply call my vectoring speed. It means if I'm looking at for flight, I'm someplace on that approach plate, and I need to slow down on to an intermediate speed to be able to slow down to the later speed. That intermediate speed is the one where I can deploy flaps or gear, depending which one is my first to go. And that's going to be my response to ATC when they first say, you know, best forward speed, well, I can give you 120 to darts, and then I got to slow down to 90.
And in a lot of planes, you can accomplish that with the same power setting the whole way, right?
Like absolutely.
In a Bonanza, you've got everything clean for one speed, approach flaps slow you to your final approach speed, and then gear down takes you down, right? That's true for a lot of planes.
That's true for a lot of planes.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
The one thing about getting resequenced around that sometimes is an issue, and it frequently can be at busier airports, is right now you're going down the final, you got a slowtation behind you. So you have that kind of in your favor as compared to maybe a 600 series Challenger is behind you when you ask to get resequenced around, and then now it's a different level of you're concerned about the speed of the airplane behind you. So if you're the only two airplanes out there and then you want to get vectored around and then maybe you're mixing it up with just another piston single, then okay, fine. But it's not always a foregone conclusion that if you come out, there won't be another jet behind you.
Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate what Doug was talking about and the power of the VNAV capabilities of the 750 in particular, but there are other boxes out there that have it as well. It is amazing. And keep in mind, when the 750 first came out, it didn't have any VNAV capabilities except vertical speed required would show, but then it was up to you to match it all and figure it all out. But now the VNAV capabilities in the 750 with its latest software updates and the XIs is amazing. And so it's easy to put these fixes in, you know, 1 or 2 miles ahead of where the top of descent and where your bottom of descent is, and get all leveled off and control your speed. So that is a good point, that this fairly new pilot missed the opportunity to use the tools that were available to him, and it would have made all the difference in the world.
Yeah, it's there in the 430 as well, and it has been forever. And using track offset. And it's amazing when I talk to pilots, well, do you use VSR and it's deer in the headlights? What are you talking about? Never heard of it. It blows my mind how many instrument pilots flying with 430s, 530s, the G1000s had it.
Yeah.
The early G1000s had it. And pilots are oblivious to this fantastic tool, but we have to know how to use it.
And to build
on. What are
you
talking about, Doug?
Vertical speed required.
I'm out of here.
To build on that a little bit, I'm also a proponent of using that offset to give you that level segment. But also, if you're in a situation where you want to carry a lot of speed, I like the idea of reducing that angle that I'm going to be descending at. And that's something you can do in the GTN, is to set it up so it will be a shallower descent angle. And for me, that sets me up to be more comfortable carrying more speed if it's a shallower angle on the descent.
That's a great point. And the Garmin stuff is smart enough where if you run into a segment where it needs to be steeper, it'll do it for you. It won't throw an error. But this Cardinal, because it's not paired with a PFD, it just has the basic V-calc, the original type of VNAV in quotes that the GTNs had. But if you do pair it with a more capable PFD, you get VNAV, all the way down to merge seamlessly with the approach all the way to the runway in one nice continuous descent. But as Doug, you've pointed out, that's not always what you want. And Kevin, you pointed out that it'll do it at a 3-degree angle, but man, if you're doing 180 knots or something, that's not what you want either. You're never going to have a level segment to slow down, and you'll be coming down too steep to do it. Another thing I want to talk about is practicing higher speed approaches and whether you set an upper limit and what that is on how fast that you'll be, say, on the final segment. I'll throw that at you, Catherine, because you see, I know you've talked about before on check rides how pilots fly so slow. You know, they might do 90 knot approaches every time.
75,
all right. So sell me on the value of practicing faster approaches and how fast should you be able to go?
Well, as I think Doug's laughing about the same thing, sometimes we see just going on the far low end, I see people flying approaches so slowly. And I don't know if it's just that they're doing a check ride, but they're actually increasing their workload because the plane is kind of like, the wings are wagging and, it's just a lot more work. And you are flying longer. So that's a more time that you're going to have to be, correcting course and such. Obviously, flying way too fast is can be a problem too. But I think if you are flying faster, you have to correct less in general. And, I think it makes for a smoother approach.
Tom?
I think it's just another example of our failure in instrument training is not training people to actually fly the way you fly in the system once you, get out of the training mode, right? It's like weather. I mean, how many pilots in instrument training actually really go out and fly much, if at all, in actual instrument conditions? But great point about, you get into busy airports, they're going to expect you to be able to keep up with the air traffic control, with the communication, with the navigation, the speeds, all that sort of thing. It's not flying around at, approaches at 90 knots. And too many pilots get all the way through instrument training without having to experience that kind of stuff.
But every approach in training is to minimums, basically. And if you're in your 172 breaking out at 200 and a half, yeah, you don't want to be going much faster than right. 90 knots. But in the real world, it's much more common to break out at 1,000 feet right. And then got all the time in the world to slow down.
Right. Yeah. The Cirrus curriculum has them slowing to 115 at the initial fix. In the training that Cirrus pilots, when they buy a brand new Cirrus and they go through their CSIP training or whatever they call it, and I get so many pilots coming to me with a Cirrus, I say, come on, this is Cirrus. Why are we slowing down so soon?
Mark?
One of the advantages I had of teaching at Centennial Airport is that during instrument training there, people would get keep your speed up. And I remember getting one, we talked, just mentioned a 172. I flew an approach at 120 knots in a 172 down to the final approach fix. And, in a 172, it's easy. You just pull the power then and you're done. And it just slows down. So this really is an important training thing to be able to get used to and learn how to do it in your airplane.
I was curious about joining the glide path from above. Nobody chose that. And it's, the rule is, that's generally not something that you want to do. But I'd be just curious from particularly the instructors around the table. Is there ever a time when that makes sense or is that acceptable? How dangerous is that really?
When you say it makes sense to capture from above?
Yeah. I mean, is there ever a situation when it's like, well, that'll be okay?
Only if you've misplanned properly. To be very honest, that's my perspective.
I'm going to go around right now because I realize I'm not going to be able to capture.
No.
Okay.
No, it can be done. It can be done. It's difficult. It kind of destabilizes things till you're on it. That's all. Again, if you know the numbers for your airplane, you should be able to work it out. So once you're established, once you get to it, get back to those combination of pitch, power, and configuration, mm-hmm. and you're good from there on in.
Okay. And then understand that your autopilot probably won't do it.
Right.
Oh, right.
Kevin.
I don't like to do things that really count or matter for the first time when it really counts or matters. So for me, whenever I'm getting into an airplane type that I haven't had much experience in, I like to get out and shoot approaches when there aren't airplanes in front of me or behind me, and I can do whatever speed I want, and I don't have any particular desire to make a successful landing out of it. So I can test the upper limits of what kind of speed I can carry and successfully get down. And then if I'm able to land out of it, well, great. Now I have a data point for what I'm able to do. And if I am not able to make a safe, stable landing out of it, well, cool. I'm going to go back around and try another approach. No problem. I'm going to do a few more anyways. And having that sort of experience when it doesn't matter is a whole lot easier to apply to the situation when, rather than try to figure it out on the fly when you have a citation chewing up your tailpipe.
Yeah, no doubt.
He does have 130 hours in this airplane. So presumably he's somewhat familiar with this plane.
Depends on his approach to what he's done in training or flying up to that point, though. There's a lot of people that don't really give a whole lot of thought to, hey, I got to try this out or I got to try that.
Yeah.
And they just do the normal milk run type stuff that they do, and then they're throwing a curveball and they've got, you know, 100 of the same hour.
Right.
Repeated a bunch of times.
Well, I want to talk about the gear speed as an upper limit. Mark, when you're flying, say, Bonanzas and Moonies, is the gear speed kind of an upper limit on your the fastest approach speed that you can choose?
Yeah, unless I'm going to be in a position where there's a really huge space between the intermediate fix and the final approach fix that will really allow me to slow down in that segment. Other than that, in the normal situation, yeah, it's gear speed limitation, because once I get down, I want to be able to drop that gear.
But like by the final approach fix, the gear's got to be down.
It's got to
no
be
exceptions,
down.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. But in the Mooney, the gear speed is prior to flap speed. In the Cardinal, flap speed, we can do flaps 130, gear 125. The Mooney's one gear 120, and flap speed, I think, is 115, if I recall correct.
It depends on the Mooney, because if you look at an old Mooney C, the gear speed is like 105.
The flap speed on those is like 90 knots.
And
too.
Flap speed is even lower.
But the gear speed is higher than the flap speed, is what I'm getting to.
Right. And I think that varies a lot among airplanes.
Right.
I mean, you take a look at the 182s, and I think they're all above like, well, the 182 RGs, they're all like 140 for both of them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends which one you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Bonanzas are in the 150s, 160s. Which is
nice. Typically 154 mm-hmm. for the later model A36s, at least, is 154 for gear and approach flaps. But the older models, its gear is like 140, 143 or something like that, and flap speed's lower than that.
Yeah, and of course, in a Cirrus, you have nothing but flaps to slow down with.
Yeah, but if you're a go-fast Mooney pilot in a vintage Mooney with a gear speed of 105... That's as fast as you can go on an approach, practically.
You're going to have to find a way to slow it down without putting that gear down.
But that where this vertical speed using track offset will allow you to do that, to get to an altitude where you can slow down before the fix where you have to be at that speed. And if we know how to use it, we don't get caught by this stuff.
And knowing how long it takes you to slow down too, right? From your cruise speed to your approach speed, if you know that that takes 3 miles to do that, then that's how long you're on track off.
And part of that situational awareness is it's not only your airspeed, but your ground speed. You know, are you doing this with a big tailwind? And so, well, I got to be down at 115. Okay, but I got a 30-knot tailwind. So I'm going to have to get at that altitude sooner than if I had a headwind, as an example.
Kevin.
And just to build on that track offset tool, that's something that I will routinely use descending into a VFR traffic pattern. I'll set a long track offset 3-4 miles prior to the airport and descend and carry speed until that point. But now I have a level segment as I'm entering the traffic pattern. And in that segment, I can slow down to the speed that's appropriate for the traffic in the pattern and for the configuration I want to be in.
Mark.
we were talking about the number of tools. We talk about VCalc and all of that. And then there's this other neat tool, which a lot of people don't know even exists, and that's VNAV Direct. And what that essentially does is what you were talking about, Kevin, of getting a shallower descent, where you're telling the system, I need to be at this altitude at this point, and I want to start down now. And whatever it takes then, and if it's 200 foot per minute descent, it's a 200 foot per minute descent.
I'd like to offer one caveat, okay? I don't use this tool, VFR, at night. It almost killed me once, okay? Because I just set up the thing. It doesn't take into consideration terrain.
Right.
It's just taking in the math to get from here, holding my hand up way high, to here, down low, out farther out. It doesn't consider anything that might be in the way. So it's not like an LNAV plus V or an LP plus V. You got to think about what's out there.
Oh, absolutely. It's really it's an IFR tool. It's, you know, cross such and such fix at this altitude, and, you know, I'm 4,000 feet high, and go, start down now, just bring me down comfortably.
If you're doing a star, you're doing an arrival, okay, and it's example of Loves 2, you're going into Kennedy, cross Loves at 6. You can set it up, be 6,000 at Loves, and it's going to tell you from wherever you are right now, and ATC says cross Loves at 6, and it's your discretion. And it's right there, what you need to cross Loves at 6.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk here about different ways to sort of improvise and fly profiles that are different than the standard one that you might practice over and over in training. And it strikes me that, you know, like Kevin, you said, you don't want to do something for the first time when it matters. You want to have practiced it before. And some of the stuff that seems like it's off script a little bit still benefits a ton from knowing the script. I mean, Doug, you're talking about knowing the numbers in your cardinal, and that's how you know that you can do this specific thing, even if it's not somewhere, you know, on your performance profiles matrix explicitly. You know you can do it because you know what the plane does, right? And so I think knowing that script, being well practiced in the sort of defaults that you use, also lets you go off script a little bit easier.